Welcome back to the Legends Among Us podcast, a show devoted to the troopers and veterans of 3rd Cavalry Regiment. And we have a number of troopers that are going to be heading off to NTC here. Actually, troopers who have already left, some who will be leaving next week. The majority will be leaving next week. This is part two, the companion piece, if you will, to the show that we just did with our dietitian, Lieutenant Nass. And so we are bringing in today Captain Stephen Gay, who is the program manager for our H2F program here. He is a physical therapist by trade, but I wanted to give you, Steve, just a couple of minutes to give us some more backstory on your history. And again, welcome back to the show. You were here back in July with Caitlin, so it's good to have you here one-on-one. Just love to hear how things have been.
Absolutely. I've been here now for just a little bit over a year. I've been in the Army for going on 16 years now. Spent the first just over a decade as an enlisted man in First Special Forces Group as a Special Forces medic and Operations Intelligence Sergeant, and went through the Army Baylor Doctor of Physical Therapy program down in San Antonio. And this is actually like my first duty station as a bona fide physical therapist. But moving into the program director role for 3CR's H2F program is allowed me to leverage a lot of my military experience and operations planning and all that toward this problem set as we've fielded this program at our unit.
I'm sure you all are collecting both anecdotal evidence and empirical data to support the validity of your program. Mm-hmm. What kind of progress have you seen in the year that you've been here?
So overall, like, physical readiness is up compared to when I first got here. When I first got here, we were in the middle of redeployment from the last KRF rotation. And we had a lot of profiles coming out of that. We were able to, through like implementation of musculoskeletal sick call, which allows us to get earlier access to people with acute and specific musculoskeletal injuries, like you throw your back out doing deadlift, you roll your ankle in a field exercise, whatever. Like, the sooner you get to skilled physical therapy care, the better your short and long-term outcomes are. So we've seen generally less recurrence, and that's supported by like our strength and conditioning staff who implement specific exercise protocols to help prevent those kinds of injuries, as well as being more selective with what like sporting events we recommend, with what we do with like our regimental sponsored things. Like, one of the things we're talking about for Brave Rifles Week coming up is switching around some of the events, because last year we had some catastrophic injuries.
Right.
And nobody wants to get chaptered out of the Army because they broke their foot playing soccer or football,
right,
or something. So
yeah,
generally able to provide more for the force. And then over the last year, we've also grown quite a bit. So when I got here in September of 24, it was just me. And then in June of 25, we started receiving some of our contracted personnel, and since then have gotten Caitlin on board. We have a nutrition technician, and so the team is slowly growing. We still have some positions that aren't filled, but each person is like a force multiplier, allows us to access more of the formation and get more of that stuff out there. But in terms of like data collection is difficult, especially since I may have been an analyst at one point, but it's not the same.
Right.
You know, trying to put together data collection systems and processes is tough, but we do a pretty good job of capturing who comes in for musculoskeletal sick call and what their mechanism of injury is. And so when we were first getting things going, seeing a lot of programs aren't deliberately planned. It's just we're playing the ad hoc, hey, it's 6:30, easy button is go for a run. So yeah, folks were going from running no miles to running 20, 30 miles a week. And you get a lot of, maybe not an injury, but joint pain, whatever, stuff that makes you feel like you can't perform at your best. Mm-hmm. And we've seen a downtick in that by implementing some of those PRT guidance and providing some of those strength and conditioning programs to the formation.
Well, that's great to hear, Steve. So I was talking to Caitlin before, and I had mentioned to her that she's a bit of a unicorn on this installation, and probably to some degree in the Army, because I don't know of too many nutritionists that exist at the brigade level that are such an available asset to troopers at the squadron level in our case. Your team in general, I would say, is a bit of a unicorn on this post. Are there any other H2F teams that exist in the same capacity that you all do?
Yeah, there are some who are better equipped from a personnel perspective, but it really just depends on how much time you have to develop the program in garrison. Without having those things locked tight in garrison, it's hard to be expeditionary. It's hard to take that forward with you.
Sure.
So a couple of the other brigades in 1st Cavalry Division have H2Fs from, like, we're in the FY25 fielding. Mm-hmm. There are also new ones that came online in FY26 and then some more. So by 2027, I think we'll have 11 or 12 on post.
Oh, wow.
But varying levels of staffing.
So not necessarily as robust a team, but still a team nonetheless that's kind of getting after it like you guys are. As we dig into this a little bit more, we're gearing up for NTC. Mm-hmm. We already have people that have deployed to NTC. The vast majority of the regiment's going to be deploying next week. We're inevitably going to go into this cycle that is disruptive to our normal patterns of life, how we do nutrition, how we do sleep, how we do mental, emotional, and to some degree spiritual wellness. But certainly I'm thinking about the musculoskeletal impact of not only just being in the box, which is going to be disruptive in many ways, but even just RSOI and regeneration, where, as you mentioned earlier, we're going to be doing reverse rock operations to get heavy loads, line haul back to Fort Hood. As you think about those different phases, even now with torch to RSOI to live fire and force on force, and then concluding with regen, what do you foresee, Steve, are the primary issues that troopers will face versus perhaps, we can get into this a little bit later, more junior leaders all the way to senior leaders within the organization?
I think now's kind of a good time to bring up like the difference between injury and pain, right? So not to say that you can only have one, you can have both, but by and large, a lot of the stuff that we experience, especially from like rock operations through RSO and I, when we're not actually participating in any real high force activities, like when we're maneuvering over uneven terrain, more likelihood for a real injury versus just like, ooh, that didn't feel good.
Right.
But when you're doing rock operations and you're just going, going, going all day, you have an increased risk for pain with heavy lifting. And I think we were kind of talking about a little bit before, but one of the things the RCO says to the newcomers every month is be fit for war, right? And you're only as ready as you are right now. We got folks there doing rock operations. They're relying on the fitness that they've cultivated and maintained over the past 6 months, as opposed to anything they're going to do there to preclude them from getting hurt or overreaching and doing something outside of their current physical capacity. And that's typically when you have that pain stuff. Like, back pain is a huge one. I was doing motor pool Monday and I had to pick up this big camo net by myself, and now my back hurts. It's like, well, there's a few things there. Did you warm up? Did you do anything to get ready for that physical activity? Or did you just go into something that was probably at the threshold of what you're capable of? Why didn't you get a buddy? Is there like movement mechanics and strategy for accomplishing tasks is a huge piece. Mm-hmm. So if there's something you think is outside of your capability, just get some help. You got a bunch of people walking around doing the same thing as you. Get a hand and make it easier, because that pain, while not debilitating or injurious, is going to affect your performance when you do transition from forward garrison operations into force on force and live fire exercise stuff.
As you were discussing pain and the affliction of pain that will inevitably occur as troopers are deprived of sleep, have poor sleeping environments, sleeping on cots, sleeping on the ground, but then to wake up the next morning sore, at least I know for myself, I usually just wake up sore. I haven't even lifted anything, but then to go from that into now you're moving 155 rounds and those things aren't light. What are we looking at possibly?
Well,
injury-wise.
So, like, difference maybe between live fire exercise and force-on-force, right? Force-on-force, like, combat happens. Mm-hmm. You're not going to, it's not like, hey, we're coming, and you get 20 minutes to do a quick warm-up and prep all your stuff. It's like, it's time to go now.
Yes.
Let's go. Difference from that to, like, live fire exercise, like, hey, we've got 2 hours until we're on the docket. Maybe you've got an hour to take a nap and catch up on some of that sleep. Maybe you got 20 minutes to get some fuel in you. I'm sure Caitlin talked quite a bit about active phase nutrition. And then right before it's time to put your kit on and everything, we have the joint PMCS stuff that I pushed to the HQF extenders. And when the mapped PT was in Korea for this last rotation, he pushed it pretty heavily as well. We have a website, 3crphysicaltherapy.com. It's got all the joint PMCS protocols. It's pretty extension based. So just moving your body through full range of motion before you start expecting it to do more athletic tasks. And so the point there being, like, when you can warm up in preparation for an activity, warm up, get your body moving, get blood pumping, and then you're going to decrease your risk for injuring or experiencing pain during that higher level physical activity. Yeah, there's something else I want to put in there, but I forgot.
That's okay. Jump in. Jump in if it comes to you. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about, what are the troopers going to be doing? They're going to be moving across uneven terrain, mm-hmm. presumably under load if they're not in a vehicle, like a JLTV, or if they're not in a striker, then they're going to be on foot moving under load. My natural tendency is to default to lower back and hip issues. Mm-hmm. What other issues? Is that probably the most common issues that they'll experience, or what other issues might they experience?
So for the folks who are on the ground maneuvering, doing stuff, mm-hmm. probably going to be back, knee, and ankle. And then for the folks who are running the talk and staff officers and things like that, it's probably going to be back and whatever lingering things that they've had from their maybe longer military career, right? Sure. So you had knee pain before from sitting down too much.
Yeah.
You're going to be sitting down a lot during force on force.
Yeah.
You're going to be, as we were talking about it before a little bit too, the difference in physical and mental requirement at echelon, right? Mm-hmm. So the folks who are out in maneuver elements are going to be much more physically involved. But the folks back, even the folks back in the talk, although they're not actually out there moving over that uneven terrain, they're not humping a ruck, they're not moving mortar rounds, they're not moving artillery pieces, they're not doing all that high physical demand stuff, your brain consumes more energy than your muscles do. Mm. And when you're sleep deprived, undernourished, dehydrated, and being graded on the clarity and quality of your decision making, these three things set up the stage for failure, right? Yeah. So if you're not finding the time during your day to catch a 20 minute nap or to throw down that extra canteen of water or electrolyte beverage or get in PC or MRE, you're gonna operate at a suboptimal level. We're talking about not the risk for injury as a consequence of those different environments, but I guess that was more on underperformance. When we look at injury, we are going to be probably more geared toward those who are in maneuver elements. So in January, when we got back from block leave, it's a crapshoot on who stayed fit over the block leave. Like, yes, as soldiers, it's our responsibility to maintain our physical fitness. Whether or not we have a dedicated PRT time or we're on leave, you need to be doing something to maintain your fitness, because you never know when the call comes down the pipe, especially in the near future, having a known major muscle movement. I would hope that people had maintained their fitness. It wasn't very representative in what I saw at sick call immediately after block leave, but we pushed a road to NTC program that focused a lot on single leg stability and strength, which when you deconstruct rucking up a mountain with a 80 to 120 pound pack, that's pretty much what you need. You're moving over uneven terrain. You need ankle, knee, and hip stability.
Yeah.
You need lower extremity strength. You need endurance. You need all those, like, we call them pillars of fitness to successfully accomplish that task and then be ready to go on and do the next one. Where I expect a lot of our injuries to come from, like the true injuries, like somebody rolls their ankle really bad and maybe needs to come back to the talk and to the roll two and be evaluated by a provider, is going to be maneuver over uneven terrain under load in poor visibility conditions.
Sure.
So under nods, I don't think we have the phosphorus two tubes here.
No.
Like,
no. No.
Different
organization. Yeah, different budget.
Yeah, but so we don't have good depth perception with monos. The green isn't great in the desert. It doesn't give you a good understanding of what the floor looks like underneath you.
Yeah.
And so as you're trying to navigate these obstacles, you run an increased risk. So part of that, like from an operational perspective, you've got planning, movement timelines, realistic expectations that you can take your time maneuvering there and maintain a posture that is high on defense and security.
Yeah.
So, but when that does happen, I think there's a very important piece in there that we're not really training for GWAT conditions anymore. If somebody on the FOB in Afghanistan or out on NOT rolled their ankle kind of bad, you could send it back to BAF, get a quick x-ray, see what's up.
Sure.
And they could be back before the next mission if there was nothing big going on.
Sure.
And we look at LISCO operations, and now you have to really think about who, life, limb, or eyesight, legitimately needs to come back. Now we go from the golden hour concept into, okay, I need to reconstitute and maintain as much force as far forward as possible. And so one of the things we're doing, I've got a medic rotation. So a couple medics come and help me at the MSK sit call, and they learn a lot about this musculoskeletal stuff. Part of that is bracing, taping, these measures that you can implement to keep somebody in the fight for longer. And by and large, it's been my experience that medics see themselves more as EMTs in the civilian world. And I think that's reflective of their current curriculum for the 68 Whiskey course, like multi-system trauma. I know how to stabilize that. I know how to plug the hole. I know how to put a tourniquet on. I know how to needle these, all the good stuff to keep somebody alive in the face of like significant trauma. But we kind of gloss over. And I saw it. I was at Bragg for my internship, and I went over to JSON a couple times. They have like a physical therapy week now. Mm-hmm. It talks more about this bracing, taping, constitution piece to keep people in the fight for stuff that doesn't need to be medically evaluated now. But I don't see that skill set very prevalent in the 68 Whiskey population. And so we're trying this to get some knowledge and education further forward so that these leaders and junior enlisted men can go in, and when they get back to their unit, they now have a new skill set that they can train everybody on.
Have you seen receptivity to the training that you have provided up to this point?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
That's great.
Do you know if any of them will actually have opportunities? I'm assuming they would to implement mm-hmm. this when we're out at NTC. If like a 68 Whiskey is right next to 11 Bravo and he rolls his ankle, have a seat. Let's wrap that thing up.
Yeah. So our brigade PT is doing a lot of training just with large groups of medics. Like mm-hmm. the ones that I interact with more, just two on a 12-week rotation.
Okay.
And those two are going to be very proficient at these skills. And so we'll have one that should be back and one that will be forward with the line unit. And it's been my understanding so far that they're already going into like training their teams and their squadron personnel so that within those squadrons we'll have an increased capability to reconstitute and maintain people further forward. And it's just unfortunate that where we are in like the time cycle of things, like we only have a couple produced to that extent. But as we move forward between like NTC and Korea later this year, we'll be able to make meaningful gains in that pursuit.
Sure.
So that by the time we get to Korea, we'll have a higher baseline understanding of like the difference between, you know, multi-system issues and like discrete musculoskeletal things, and an increased understanding of how we maximize our like skill set at our level to keep somebody as far forward as we can.
Yeah.
And part of that is like them feeling confident and competent in making those decisions. And then the other part is from like a leader and provider side being like, yes, you did a good job. This guy was perfect to keep forward. Or, hey, this one little detail would have made me send him back sooner, but no harm. Like, still no harm to that individual soldier, no harm to the Army as an organization, no harm to the unit. But in the future, you'll learn that. And those experiences are irreplaceable, sure, right? Because now I get to do that in training, either a training environment in Korea or a training environment at NTC, and that'll stick with me when I go in the event that I'm doing something real.
There will be some great opportunities, hopefully, for them to employ some of the skills that you have taught them. I want to talk a little bit about, I guess you would call it postvention measures. Caitlin and I talked a little bit about it with regards to nutrition, how there will probably, or could potentially, I should say, there's an option for troopers to do some sort of detoxification, rehab, be it using probiotics or something like that, to come off of what is perhaps a blip in their nutritional timeline, if you will. Because really, like, if it's 2 weeks, if we're just talking about the box, that's going to be the most intense 2 weeks of the 4 weeks we're out there. I know that there is something similar for musculoskeletal rehabilitation as well. What does that look like based upon job responsibilities for troopers that are out there?
We'd break it into a few different phases, right? Kind of like you did earlier with the ROC, RSO, and I, live fire and force on force kind of being put together, and then reverse RSO and I, reverse ROC, and regen operations as like a separate block. And then after that, you would still want to do like an on-ramp. So for all levels, you got to think, I'm going to a place with minimal availability of equipment, generally higher physical demand for some throughout like the regular day. And then for others, it's going to be a significant decrease in their physical requirements. So this is a good opportunity to bring up like the difference between what is rehabilitation and what is reconditioning. Rehabilitation is when I've lost function as a result of damage to tissues. So not just like dysfunctional tissue, like we talk about low back pain. It's usually dysfunctional signaling, dysfunctional at a tissue level, but nothing's broken, nothing's out of place, nothing's done. That's like your injury versus pain category. When we're rehabbing somebody, something is not whole and we have to make you whole so that we can recondition you and get you back to where you were before, right, or better. For reconditioning, we want to think about what's the minimal effective dose of something I can do to prevent me from losing fitness over this period of time. So I have to do less reconditioning on the back end. Because I know we've all done it. I think this last block leave, I was super lazy. I didn't do much. And I put on a few pounds. I deconditioned a little bit. And when I got back in January, I was like, man, I got to work really hard to get this stuff back. If I'd done one or two interval sessions a week and one strength training day, it would have been like I didn't miss anything. Mm-hmm. You know, and it would have curbed some of the weight gain. It would have curbed all my deconditioning. So when we look at doing ROC and RSO and I, if I'm doing a lot of hinge-based stuff, like I'm picking up a bunch of stuff and moving it around, probably don't need to do much more of that, but I'm probably not running or rucking much. So doing a few 30-60 type things, like in the Ruba, you there's still enough distance to get some intervals on. There was an interesting research study done about folks climbing Kilimanjaro, and they just did one 200 meter interval per day, and it decreased the incidence of HAPE and HACE, like high altitude pulmonary edema and cerebral edema. But similarly, it's like we're talking about conditioning the cardiovascular system to the environment. And when we're going from one place to another, there's environmental conditions to consider. Right. So doing exercise outside in those conditions that you're going to have to perform in during live fire exercise and force on force, good idea to do a little bit of high intensity work to maintain your fitness and then move on. I think in garrison, people start to get carried away because you're like, PT is the number one thing I'm doing today. It's got like, I got to be smoked. Like I got to be useless for the rest of the day. I'm like, dude, if you're useless for the rest of the day after PT in the morning, what are you doing all day? And we got to really take that into account when we look at being forward. Because I don't want my brief training session to increase the chance for catastrophic loss during a force-on-force engagement or during a live fire exercise. So taking into account our decreased access to nutrition, sleep, hydration, new environment, just a real quick, short, high-intensity work. Like I was talking to some of the medics on my team. I was like, you can do a set of like death by 10 meters. That doesn't take up a bunch of space. You got your kit. You can do some lunges and some pull-ups, and it doesn't take but 10, 20 minutes. And it shouldn't be something that gives you jelly legs and jelly arms. It's just enough to signal to your body, because our body is super efficient, right? If I'm not using it, it's like, why am I wasting energy on keeping this stuff around? I don't need this capability. Doing something high intensity says, no, I need to be able to do it. So that in 2 weeks when you need to do it, it's still there.
Well, and that sounds like a good plan. I'm envisioning just myself or some of my staff peers who, as you know, will be sitting in vans for a good portion of this time until we jump talk. And even then we'll jump talk and then we'll sit in the van some more for 2 weeks. So yeah. I'm just thinking about stepping out of the van like during the day and doing some lunges with a kid on and then going back to work.
Yeah, do some lunges. You got a door on the back of those things. You grab onto the door frame, do a couple pull-ups. This is not the environment to improve your fitness.
Right.
Like if you can't do body weight pull-ups, trying to do pull-ups with kid on is probably not the best idea.
Yeah.
But there's a way to do it. You got desks. You can do a modified supine row. You've got access to something that resembles a pull-up bar. You just got to be creative. We were also talking about this concept of friction. When MetTC permits, do a little bit of something every day. You don't need to do it multiple times a day. Just a little bit of something every day will help carry you through so that when you get back here and we're done with regen, you're not completely deconditioned from all the work you put in between block leave and for NTC. And then even after that, you don't want to just jump right back into whatever you are doing.
That was going to be my next question. Yeah. Is what should people not do when they get back?
What you should not do is probably like a 1,000-pound club on your first week back to like full stuff, right?
Yeah.
You want to on-ramp, and it doesn't have to take super long. We're going to push out something similar to how we did for Road to NTC. So when we get into the reverse RSO and I phase, we're going to push out like a post-NTC on-ramp to get folks back up or start getting folks back up because we haven't had access to equipment. If you think you're going to go in and squat your previous 3-rep max without any increased risk for injury after being sleep deprived, undernourished, and dehydrated for however long, 3-6 weeks, it's not a recipe for success.
Yeah.
So we want to have some standoff between us getting back and us doing like the really high physical demand stuff. Like AFT, technically, from my perspective, falls into that category as well. I'm sure we'll have folks who are coming up on expiration, but giving just a couple weeks to touch that trap bar a couple times before you go and do back day and just cat curl your way up with 350 pounds. Because, you know, I always deadlift 350 pounds. You want to set yourself up for success. And that what that really looks like is a little bit of something. It doesn't even have to be every day, especially when you're in the box and doing force on force activities. If you got 3 10-to-20-minute high intensity efforts in there and try to sneak in some naps to recover some of that lost sleep, make sure you're eating when you're supposed to be eating and you're definitely hydrated. You'll be in a different world from folks who don't try to do those things.
The only thing that's kind of coming to my mind as we wrap up this time is how have you seen leaders enforce good standards with regards to physical fitness and what can they do coming back from NTC to ensure that their troopers are recovering in an appropriate way?
I think the thing that people want to hear is, oh, just don't do PT today. And that's like not what I'm going to say.
Sure.
You got to recondition. So you got to start at a lower level than you were before you left. And you've got to reintroduce those compound movements so that we can remind our body how to move under those loads before we start really pushing it. And in the perspective of like guidance to leadership would just be like, don't zonk, do something. The H2F Academy has a great program called TMRM, Tactical Mobility, Active Recovery and Mindfulness. And they have like a YouTube page. You just go and be like, hey, we're going to do this 30-minute TMRM thing. Mm-hmm. And it's basically yoga with guided meditation. But it gets your body moving through full range again. And it's a great way to knock the dust off. You've been sitting in the expando van for 3 weeks. Like, right. Let's knock the dust off. Let's get our body moving. And then the next day, we're going to do whatever. You should be on a deliberately planned and intelligently progressed PRT plan. That's what the strength coaches provide. That's what we got a mission when we start redeploying from NTC to get folks through the spark for squadron priority weeks, get everybody on pertinent mesocycles. So like mm-hmm. a like an 8-week block of training that has a specific purpose to develop certain pillars of fitness that are relevant to those job categories that we have in the regiments. We have infantrymen, we have artillerymen, we have maintainers and sustainers, mm-hmm. and they all have different physical demands. Everybody has a different physical requirement to do their job. We need to provide that service mm-hmm. for the regiment, and leaders need to hold their formation accountable for conducting those things so that we aren't getting hurt doing PT.
Well, this is good. I'm reevaluating now whether or not I should host Division UMT PT in April, because it's going to be a backbreaker. And I don't know if I'll be ready for that, but we'll see.
Oh, when in April?
Might be the first week. But yeah. I think we get back around the 22nd-ish of March. So it'll be two and a half weeks. Sounds like 8 weeks is ideal in terms of rehabilitation and recovery.
So from a reconditioning perspective, you're really looking at like two to three weeks.
Okay.
I would probably not want to do like a one rep max test until around the 4-week mark. But
you keep gravitating towards deadlifts. Is that the thing that is going to break off people the most?
No.
Is they're going to come in and they're going to max out some sort of weight?
No, not really. But like the closer you get to your capacity, the higher the chances that something goes bad. I say deadlift because it is part of the AFT. The hex bar deadlift puts you in a position where you have to bend your back pretty much. Nobody does Jefferson curls until they do their 350 thing where their back is rounded and they're extending segmentally up to stand up. Not disparaging the AFT or deadlift itself. It's just there's an individual drive, right? If I'm a high performer, I need to max this thing.
Sure.
And you set the stage by creating an environment that isn't inherently competitive. It's meant to be competitive against you.
Right.
But all your buddies are around.
Of course.
So it's time to show up or shut up.
Yeah.
And so you're going to push maybe a little further than your body is ready. And that's a good thing. When we talk about like fostering a culture of excellence, like that's the environment that creates, like when you see people doing great things, it makes you want to do great things. But we just want to temper that with realistic expectations of what we're capable of at the moment. And then we can grow into that. But if I went today and did a 3 rep max deadlift and I was like 250, but I've done over 350 before, my ability to get back to that is going to be much easier, and it's going to take way less time than somebody who's never done that before. And so if we just don't give ourselves enough time to get back into it, we're setting the stage for an increased chance for something to go wrong.
Sure.
And I just bring up 1 rep max stuff because we like to do 1,000-pound clubs. We like to do stuff like that. But by the time we get to Brave Rifles Week, will be a good time to do something like that. Maybe not all of April, but maybe not till the end of April.
Well, Steve, I always appreciate your insights. You look at physical fitness very systematically, and even the concepts that you have in terms of improving this organization are well thought out. Most of the things that you talk about, I can only hope that we actually implement as an organization, because I think that they're good things. And I'm enough of an optimist to believe that if we actually were able to, if budget were not an issue and manning were not an issue, if we actually implemented the things that you did, that would be transformative to 3CR. So I appreciate you being here.
Well, thank you. And yeah, I think that's what H2F is meant to be for everybody who gets an H2F. And then we've got these like area support teams for non-resourced units. The point is to not replace the things that we've always done, but to give us the tools and resources to do them better so that we can just, as an organization across the board, the holistic part of holistic fitness, mm-hmm. if we have better individuals, the organization as a whole is going to benefit as well.
Agreed. Well, hey, thanks again for coming back. It's been a while. I will be very curious to hear how things go when we get back from NTC, but from your end with regards to recovery and rehabilitation from your entire interdisciplinary team.
Thank you. Yeah, that would be fun.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks again for joining us on the Legends Among Us podcast. Have a great week. Yeah.